everybody, welcome into the Cubs Weekly Podcast presented by Wintrust, proud legacy partner of the Chicago Cubs and exclusive home of Cubs Checking. Open online today at wintrust.com/cubsweekly. And if you're listening to just the audio version of this podcast, check us out on the Marquee Sports Network app. For Andy Martinez, I'm Tony Andraghi here. And Andy, we got a chance to catch up with a bunch of guys at Cubs Convention, a lot of Cubs alumni. Yep. We requested a lot of these guys. We had a half dozen of these interviews that are coming out. This one, Giovanni Soto, that we'll get to in a bit here, was one of the cooler ones, I think, just because we had the list of alumni that we were going through, and this was one that I think we all identified here as, like, let's get a chance to talk to him. He was part of so many big moments here in Chicago, obviously, former Rookie of the Year, caught a bunch of pitchers, a lot of different perspectives. But what were you looking forward to chatting with Giovanni about?
I was looking forward to chatting to him about just his Rookie of the Year campaign and being on those special teams in 07-08. If you think about kind of the Cubs history, right? It was 84 is one of the big teams in modern Cubs history because of it was that was the first one to make the playoffs since they went to the World Series in 45. And then the 89 team made the NLCS, but then there was this gap until 98, 03, that kind of era. And then there was another gap until 07, 08. And that was 07, 08, I remember that was those years where it kind of felt like this might actually be the team. Like, they are really, really, this is a really, really good team. It's a crux of a very good roster. And they obviously just didn't get the job done. But it was interesting to talk to Giovanni Soto, who that, if you, Cubs fans can think of 2016 and, like, Chris Bryant being Rookie of the Year and all the young guys coming up through that squad. Well, Giovanni Soto was a Rookie of the Year as a catcher. It seemed like that was a good omen for things to come. So just getting to chat to him about that those teams, I thought was going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, kind of a funny story about Soto that I thought about as I was going into this too was I was in college when he first came up, you know, in 08, 09, 10, when he won Rookie of the Year, right, and All-Star, and, you know, really kind of made a name for himself. And it was one of those years, I think it was the summer of 09 maybe, that my cousins and I and my sisters and I used to go to sit in a game. Every summer we would go and we would sit in the bleachers and we would try to get front row. You know, we were successful most of the time in order to do so, you know, wait in line and all that kind of stuff. And so we sat front row, and during batting practice, Gio hit a home run ball. And right before he'd hit it, Reed Johnson was like in the outfield shagging, and he threw up a ball. And so I caught the ball and that Reed Johnson threw up. And then me and my cousin were standing there, and we were not paying any attention. And all of a sudden I look up, and Soto like just hit this ball, and it was a rocket. And I just stuck my hand out, and it hit right off my hand, fell in the basket. I grabbed it. So I had two balls right away, one from Reed Johnson, one from Giovanni Soto, right? Or one that Reed Johnson was playing catch with. And my hand hurt, wasn't broken, anything, wasn't a big deal. But some guy came up to me a little bit after that, and he was like, hey, you know, my dad's not feeling well right now, but Gio is his favorite player. I'd love to buy that ball off you. And I was like, I don't want to sell this. Like, I just got it. Hurt my hand to catch it. But, like, I also caught a home run ball, like, no glove. I was an adult. You don't bring a glove to even the bleachers when you're an adult. I'm pretty passionate about that. But anyways, so I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. He kept, like, coming back throughout the game, and he was like, I'll buy you a round of beer. You know, I'll give you the cash in my pocket. I ended up making somewhere around, like, $60 and a round of beer or something from it. And I gave him the ball. And I was like, that was awesome. I gave him the Reed Johnson ball that he threw up to me. I kept the Giovanni Soto ball for myself.
I hope he's not
He probably doesn't even remember that. He might have just been, like, trying to swindle me anyway. He told me this sob story about his dad being sick. Whatever. I don't know.
Right.
Either way.
Wanted a ball.
Yeah, and I'll always have this like special place in my heart for Gio Soto because that was like this cool memory that my cousins and I still laugh about with. So,
and as a college kid, $60 is like $600 bucks.
I'm
like that's a steal and a half.
And it was like two free beers and $60. I'm like, this is awesome. Yeah, I was 21 years old. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic. But anyways, on to the conversation that we had with Giovanni Soto.
Hey everyone, Andy Martinez here. I'm joined by Cubs legend Giovanni Soto, former Rookie of the Year. Gio, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for spending the time. I want us to get started. What have you been up to the last few years? Since your playing career has ended, what have you been up to?
Right now, just, you know, as a ball player, you travel a lot and, you know, you're away from home. Right now, I got three kids, so I'm enjoying my kids and taking them to soccer, baseball, volleyball, and trying to get back a little bit of time that I kind of missed and, just being with the family and enjoying it.
I know a lot of players have talked about, like, when they watch their kids play, sometimes it's like, it's more nerve-wracking than when you're a former professional athlete. What's it like watching your kids play? Is it tougher than when you were playing?
It's nerve-wracking. Yeah, it's nerve-wracking. You want them to do good while at Also, you don't want to pressure them and all that. You want them to have fun and to enjoy what they're doing. But yeah, it is definitely more nerve-wracking.
So you're here at Cubs Convention. How often are you keeping up with baseball in general and specifically the Cubs now that you're away from the game?
Right now, actually, you know, 5-6 years ago, I retired, so I'm a little bit distant. I haven't been watching a whole lot. But, you know, baseball's my life, so I'm always going to be, a baseball guy and watch here and there. Right now, I'm a little distant, but, I'm going to come back slowly.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to keep up with the game that you followed for so long. You kind of want to unplug a little bit. But you did get back a little bit with the Cubs in terms of doing the Home Run Derby acts, you know, the experience where you got to travel the world, put on baseball showcases. What was that like, and what was it like to get to see some of these parts of the world where baseball isn't necessarily common?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we went to Mexico. We went to London. What's the other place we went to?
Was it Germany?
No, that got suspended. It was... Korea. We went to Korea.
Yeah.
It was one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life to see those cultures, different cultures, and the actual Home Run Derby was very cool, and we had a lot of support from those places, and it was really cool. It brought a lot of memories back, and I'm very blessed to have done that.
Is your swing still okay? Were you still able to connect on the ball?
Oh, yeah. You know, homers all day.
That's awesome. Going back to your playing career, 2008 obviously was a big year. You'd spent a few years prior to that in the big league, some time, but 2008 it really, really clicked for you, winning Rookie of the Year, and you were an All-Star. What kind of made it all get together for you that season?
I think that, you know, my first full season in the big leagues was 2008. I had a 05, 6, and 7, just September call-ups, just to get my feet wet and see how everything ran. But 2008 was a great season. Worked really, really hard to obviously perform and really do the best I could. But the whole team, it was more of a we had great camaraderie in the clubhouse. Everybody was in the same page, and that was one of the major things why a lot of people had a lot of success that year. We had a great bonding as people and baseball players, and I think that's what took us to be phenomenal that year.
You were an All-Star that season, and it was a special All-Star game, not just for you personally, but just in general in baseball, given that it was at Yankee Stadium and it was the last All-Star game at Yankee Stadium. How cool is that experience? Do you ever just, like, sit back and think about that?
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. That was, one of the – accomplishment that I really enjoyed, to have had the honor and the privilege to play in the old Yankee Stadium. And like I was telling you off of camera, I lived in the Bronx for 4 years when I was like 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. And to be able to play in that stadium as an All-Star game and with all the legends that were there that day, it was very humbling and honor.
Another cool experience for you in your career was Big Z's Carlos Zambrano's no-hitter against the Astros in Milwaukee. When did you kind of know? Was it during the bullpen session? Was it maybe middle of the game? When did you kind of know, like, he might be able to do it?
Actually, it was, like, in the seventh inning. I looked to my backup, Henry Blanco, and I was like, Henry, you see in the scoreboard. You see what's going on, right? He was like, yeah. Just keep catching, man. Keep catching. He's like, what should I do, if it happens? He's like, yeah, you better celebrate and be jumping up and down. So, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. So it was about the seventh inning going into the eighth that really, with six outs to go, that's when really everything kind of sinked in and the pressure came in.
Everyone thinks about the pressure that it comes to the pitcher. And there's a lot of – I'm not trying to diminish the amount of pressure that comes on the pitcher. But as a backstop, there's a lot of pressure on you too, right? Like, you got to put down the right signs.
Oh, yeah.
You want to be – how difficult was it for you those last two or three innings then?
Really, we had a great rhythm going into the to those last two, three innings. So it's just keep following the game plan, keep doing what you're doing, and by that time everybody was taking their third, fourth at bat. So we kind of knew what we were doing earlier in the game, so we just kept with the plan, kept with the game plan, and you know, thank God we finished it.
What was that celebration like? Do you have any mementos from those games?
It was kind of a blur. I can't remember exactly, but I remember catching the ball and just like, you know, putting my glove up and running to him and hugging him in the mound. It was a very surreal moment in my career.
Do you have like a ball or a glove? Like, have you kept anything that you maybe like framed up at your house from that?
I have the glove in my house that I caught that no-hitter with in a little shrine in my house.
Very cool. Going back to the 08 season, the postseason, obviously for you guys, it didn't end the way you guys wanted, but just how much pressure was that and what was it like playing in the playoffs?
It was very cool playing in the playoffs. Obviously, we played that year. We played the Dodgers. Manny was unbelievable that year. Once he got traded, it was hitting like he hit like 390. But it was really, we didn't fall into a good rhythm. It felt like we were in quicksand. We couldn't really get anything together, and it was pretty disappointing actually. But yeah, it was pretty cool to have had the opportunity to play in the playoffs. And but yeah, you know, it was one of those things where we wish we would have done way better, but it didn't happen.
Do you have a favorite memory from that season specifically?
I do. Actually, I do. And it's not going to be anything that nobody thinks. That no-hitter that I caught of Zambrano, the next day I had a no-hitter going through 7 innings. It got broken up, so we allowed one hit, so I was the first guy in history to catch a no-hitter and then a one-hitter in back-to-back games. And if nobody has done it still, I am the only catcher in history that has done that feat. So that's my proudest moment as a baseball player.
I'm curious, that second game when you're going through the fourth inning, the fifth inning, are you thinking like, here we go again? Like, this thing's really easy to do.
No, that was that was more nerve-wracking because I was like, oh my God, if this happens back to back, I don't know, you know, because the common denominator is not the pitcher then.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was Mark Loretta got a base hit off of Lilly, but. It was a great experience, but yeah, I think that's one of my greatest moments.
You also hit a walk-off home run in your career. How cool is it to do that? I mean, that's what every kid kind of dreams of, right? To be able to hit a home run that ends the game. What's that like in the big leagues?
Yeah, it's a very special moment. Once you you know, you win a game with a swing, you know, you win your team a game there. It's like you feel like you're the king of the hill for that day. But yeah, it's a very cool experience to be able to do that for your team.
There's a funny moment. Ozzie Guillen kicks your helmet when he's going on a tirade, gets ejected, and you're just kind of chuckling while he does that. Can you take us through that moment? What was that like? What was it like experiencing that firsthand?
Well, it was. I still remember it was Alexei Ramirez. It was a swinging bunt, and the ball literally was in front of home plate, and it was scooting back. And home plate is actually the last of the fair territory.
Right.
So I picked it up before it crosses the plate behind. So it's actually a fair ball, and I tagged them. And, you know, they were claiming it's foul ball. And while it was happening, I took my mask off and got the ball and tagged them and started throwing the ball around while my mask was in the middle of the home plate. And here comes Ozzie Guillen tell the umpire, hey, you know, it was a foul ball, it was over here. And then I was like, let me go get my mask. And when I try to go get my mask, he was like right there yelling out. So I was like, all right, whatever. And then I looked over, and he was kicking the mask, and he got good air, my mask, and it landed like way over there. And I just laughed, and I looked at Woody in the dugout, and I was like, you see this guy?
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, I know Ozzie Guillen. We have a good relationship. I know it's all the heat of the game, but it was definitely very funny.
Is that the best ejection you've ever seen?
I think so.
Yeah. Think so. Especially because it directly impacts you.
Yeah, I had to do something in the home plate. Yeah,
right.
Cool. It was pretty cool.
Who is the hardest pitcher to catch? Who's the hardest pitcher that you've worked with that you've had to catch?
I think I think it was Carlos Zambrano.
Carlos Zambrano. And you got a no-hitter.
Yeah. But he was tough sometimes because he threw so hard, and his ball moved so much that you don't know if you were going to get a little bit of move or run or a lot of move or run. So that was kind of tough to manage, you know, in a day-to-day, in a start-to-start basis. That was a little hard to kind of control, even for him.
Sure.
When he was on, it was, you know, it was lights out.
It's funny you say that, too, though, because you had the no-hitter, but with him, when it was catching him as tough as it was it in the bullpens, was it in between innings? Like, when did you kind of feel like, all right, this is what his pitch is doing, like, this is how I need to set up?
That's what was hard. You didn't, in the bullpen,
it changed all the time?
Yes, in the bullpen, it could have been, like, a certain way, and then all of a sudden it just changed out of the blue. Like, the ball moves way more, or it's cutting more, like, you... So it was a matter of like, oh my God, like what, you know, it's one of those guys where he has four different type of fastball, which one it is.
Yeah.
And he didn't even know how, you know, which one was it anyway. So it was one of those things. That's why he was such a special specimen in the sport, because he had that.
You mentioned the 08 season and the playoffs and how tough it was for you guys. Was there a part of you that was bummed that you weren't able to be a part of the team that broke the drought, that broke the curse? Was there a part of you or maybe other guys that you played with that were upset about that?
Oh, 100%. I was devastated. You know, I for sure thought that, you know, hopefully this is the year, and I and our team, and we are the ones that break the curse and all that. Yeah, of course, we're heartbroken after that. But, you know, it is what it is. It's baseball.
So how closely did you watch 2016 then? Like, how much did you follow the team? How much did you watch of the World Series?
I watched, and when they actually won, it was like I won.
Yeah.
You know, because I felt so good. I've been playing in Chicago. I know how the fans are acting and haven't won in such a long time. And I know how important that World Series of 2016 was for the fans, that I feel so relieved and happy for all the Chicago fans that I feel like I did it, or, you know,
right,
as part of Chicago Cubs lifer, I was like, that's awesome, you know, I feel like I did it too, you know, and, you know, so it was really cool.
What's it like being back at Cubs convention like this, or being whether at Wrigley Field or just around Cubs fans, what's it like when you get back and they recognize you?
Oh, it's good. I mean, I've always thought that Chicago Cubs fans are the best fans in the world. And you can see it, like, we're having a good year. That 2008 season, we had more fans on the road sometimes that, you know, that the other team and their home.
Right.
So, you know, Cubs fans are one of the best fans in all of sports. So feel very, very humbled and coming in here. And they still remember me. They still love me. They still cheer my name. It's really cool. Really, really humbling experience.
That's awesome, Gio. Thank you so much for stopping by and taking some time with us. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you more around Wrigley Field.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Appreciate it.
All right, we're back here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Andy Martinez, Tony Andracki. And Andy, what was that favorite part of your the convo with Gio? Not about Gio that we had earlier in my story. What was the favorite part with the convo?
No, yeah, my favorite part with Gio was definitely talking about Carlos Zambrano. I thought it was really interesting just how unpredictable it was to catch Carlos Zambrano. He mentioned he was like in a bullpen session, right? Like I wouldn't even know what it was going to be like when he got to the game on. Like having that unpredictability of being a catcher, knowing like, hey, fastball is coming, and not knowing what it's going to do,
yeah,
is kind of hysterical. And I can only imagine what it would have been like when as a hitter, right? If you're a hitter and you know like a fastball is coming and you still don't know what it's going to do, like that's really, really scary. And I think it just kind of shows how dominant Carlos Zambrano was during those runs, especially when he threw that no hitter.
Yeah, I just think it's always so cool to catch up. You alluded to this already, but just like that 07-08 run was amazing, like,
right,
just around Chicago, and 08 was the best team in the National League, led the National League in runs. Like, this offense was humming. They seemed like they were destined for the Fall Classic. Obviously didn't make, you know, didn't
right,
even win a playoff game in either of those 2 years, but it was like when they made the playoffs in 15 and 16, it was like, oh yeah, that was the first time since 07-08, and it was the first time, actually I think that was the first time ever in franchise history. So it's always cool to catch up with guys who were a part of that. Like, we had Aramis Ramirez on a previous podcast, but just to hear stories from that, I always think are really cool.
And I do think that that summer was especially special just in the grander part of Chicago, because for a while there, it seemed like it was going to be a Cubs-White Sox World Series. Like, obviously it was going to be a long shot regardless, but the White Sox across town were doing really, really well. They won the game 163, and it seemed like, oh, like, might be a Cubs-White Sox World Series. It was like the first real time that I remember where both teams were just, like, it was excitement around baseball in general in Chicago, and I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. We'll have plenty more of these interviews with Cubs alumni from Cubs Convention, so stay tuned to the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out in video form on the Marquee Sports Network app. For Andy, I'm Tony. Thanks as always for tuning in.